Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the $662 billion defence authorisation bill the President threatens to veto. Lawrence Korb, who was Assistant Secretary of Defence in the Reagan administration and is now a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, will look into provisions the White House opposes that would deny terrorist suspects, including American citizens, the right to a trial and subject them to indefinite detention, as well as the bill's imposition of harsh sanctions on Iran that could drive oil prices way up in an election year. Then we'll examine internal bickering amongst Iran's ruling elite that has paralyzed statecraft as radical elements in the regime take excessive risks to score petty victories over their domestic rivals. Dr. Trita Parsi, the author of A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran, joins us to discuss this dangerous brinksmanship as outside pressure on Iran's nuclear ambitions intensifies. Then finally, a Republican businessman, Stanley Weiss, joins us. The founding chairman of BENS, Business Executives for National Security, a nonprofit group dedicated to a more rational, business-like approach to excessive defense spending. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Huntsman is the only electable Republican, which argues against conventional political punditry that John Huntsman could eventually be the last man standing in the Republican presidential race. I'm now joined by Lawrence Korb, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, and a professor at Georgetown University. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration and is the author of A New National Security Strategy in an Age of Terrorists, Tyrants, and Weapons of Mass Destruction. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Korb.
Nice to be with you.
And the president's threatened to veto the $662 billion defense bills that the Senate voted 93-7 last week. That is a pretty a pretty unanimous margin, is it not? And my understanding is that he may not have the override votes if in the House in particular. So where would you place the political fortunes of this bill?
Well, I'd say he's going to have a problem even with members of his own party on this. One of the amendments that says that we have to put sanctions on countries and companies that do business with Iran's central bank or purchase Iranian oil has been, you know, pushed by Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey, who's a leading Democrat. So, yeah, I think he's going to have a very, very difficult time on each of those provisions. Senator Levin has worked with Senator McCain on the other amendment to the bill that deals with whether, in fact, that you can take American citizens in, who have been accused of being allied with al-Qaeda and try them in civilian courts.
So the objection the White House has, Lawrence Korb, to the sanctions on Iran, I take it that if you really go after the Iranian central bank, and it's already started to happen in a sense with the British reaction to the sacking of their embassy, but I take it that from the Iranian point of view, I don't know whether this is causa belli, but it is essentially putting their backs against the wall, and I take it that their recent behavior would indicate that they're not entirely rational players.
Well, again, I think that, as you pointed out in your introduction, there are some, you know, maneuverings within there between the speaker and the president and the ruling ayatollahs. But I think they're pretty rational, people. I mean, remember when Iraq attacked them and they were willing to settle for the status quo ante, you know, after losing hundreds of thousands of people. So I think that they are rational when it comes to their actions. Sometimes their rhetoric doesn't match it. But I think if you look at the sanctions thing, it could cause terrible problems for the people in Iran and maybe unite the various factions, many of which are not happy with the rule, with the rulers. It would impose pretty, you know, tough problems for their quality of life. And would also, I think, cause us problems with a lot of our allies, because this bill says that any country or company that does business with Iran's central bank or purchases Iranian oil, we would impose sanctions on them. I mean, China and India both purchase Iranian oil, and, you know, particularly with China, since we depend on them to, you know, lend us money to deal with our deficit, would be pretty devastating.
Well, my understanding, Lawrence Korb, is that already Iran has lost a major customer, India, because of threatened banking sanctions. And if they can't get the money to pay for their oil, they're clearly in trouble. Already their economy is in trouble. What do you think is the line that would be crossed here? I mean, the Saudis, of course, are in a kind of cold war with Iran, and they've been offering, I believe, around under the table that we'll pick up the slack. So two questions. What's the line that be crossed? And two, I take it the White House is thinking, you know, oil prices could really go up if a lot of oil is taken off the market, and that's not going to
I mean, there's no doubt, at least in the short term, until the Saudis could increase production, if in fact that's what they, you know, intended to do, the prices would go up substantially, and this would cause us problems at home as we're trying to recover from, you know, the financial crisis that we've had for the last couple of years. Eventually, the Saudis might be able to, you know, to make it up, but it's not going to help in the short term. And that's what we're trying to do, is get this economy going again in the short term. And the Chinese and Russians have given no indication that they'll go along with this. And then it would make it, you know, difficult, you know, to get the rest of the international community with us. And if it's just the United States, it's not going to have the same impact if you had, you know, the international community, which we've gotten to move along and increase sanctions, you know, since Obama's been in office.
But what then explains, Lawrence Korb, why Senate Democrats, and again, the margin, the Senate voted 93-7 to pass this defense authorization bill the president is threatening to veto. What's in it for liberal Democrats or the Democratic Party in general if oil goes up to, say, $8, $10 a gallon or whatever in an election year?
Well, obviously, when the economy doesn't do well, the people running the White House, the executive branch, gets blamed. The other, I think, the reason, you know, when you're in the Congress, it becomes easier to vote for something that has popular appeal. Americans are very upset about the Iranians. There was this attempt to, make an arrangement with the Mexican, you know, cartel to blow up a restaurant in Washington to kill the Saudi ambassador and other civilians. You've had the report of the International Atomic Energy Agency saying, you know, they're going ahead with their nuclear program. They've made, you know, threats to use nuclear weapons. They're trying to develop ballistic missiles. And so I think people are saying, you know, enough is enough. We have to do something. And I think there's also a concern that if you don't do something, you may end up, you know, with people wanting to use military force, which would be an even worse option.
Well, the president apparently marshaled, Defense Secretary Panetta as well as FBI Director Robert Mueller to make these arguments, and apparently Harry Reid didn't listen.
Well, obviously not, because I think I think a lot of people, you know, don't realize the complexity of these things and think this will show the Iranians and hopefully it'll be so severe that they'll stop their nuclear program. You know, it's interesting, for years the Congress would tell, you know, China they couldn't have most favored nation status. And, you know, that was till about 5 years ago, and then finally we got them to stop that. But the president would have to veto that each year, and then he was able to get enough to prevent the veto from being overridden.
Again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Korb, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, and professor at Georgetown University. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration and is the author of A New National Security Strategy in an Age of Terrorists, tyrants and weapons of mass destruction. Turning to the other aspects of the defense authorization bill that the White House opposes and intend to veto, these to do with detention of a suspected terrorist, even U.S. citizens who could be seized within our borders, and this would deny them the right to trial and subject them to indefinite detention. The civil liberties community is up in arms about this. How will that one play out, do you think? Again, is this one of those issues that is red meat to an angry public?
Well, I think so, since we've had a lot of these so-called lone wolves or lone operators who are American citizens who are, you know, threatening to commit terrorist acts in the United States. And again, you know, it's almost a veto-proof margin. It was like 93-6 was the vote, for this particular amendment. But again, if you step back and take sort of an unemotional look at this thing, you recognize that we have used our civilian courts to put a lot of these lone wolves or people trying to commit terrorist acts into jail. And the other thing is that in the long term, working through our civilian courts sends the message to people around the world that we are not what some of these groups are claiming that we are. And I think, you know, the whole idea of, we've seen it in our past, we've sacrificed civil liberties for people when we panicked after, you know, the attacks, for example, on Pearl Harbor in World War One with the, you know, some of these laws that we passed. But I think, you know, if you step back and you take a look and you say, do we really want to be what these people claim we are?
Well, that argument, though, frankly, Lawrence Korb, has not been made very effectively, I don't believe, by the administration, particularly in regard to the damage that torture has done to the United States' reputation around the world, because the people like Gaddafi and Mugabe and all of these people are now free to say, well, what's your problem? You know, the U.S. does it, too. I mean,
that's right. You know, and I think, you know, this struggle with these violent extremist groups like al-Qaeda is not going to be won by killing them or capturing them. All it's going to be won by stopping people from joining them by, you know, undermining their narrative. I mean, one of the great things that happened was the Arab Spring and getting rid of a lot of the, you know, the people like dictators like Mubarak, who groups like al-Qaeda were claiming we were propping up and keeping in power, and they were not true Islamists, and allowing, you know, the elections where the Islamist parties can run. I think that's the way, you know, that we need to be going. Obviously, there's some risks involved in that, and there are obviously some risks. If you put a person on trial, he or she may, may be able to, quote-unquote, beat the system. But in the long run, it's not something that's going to hurt us.
So is there anything in this bill, Lawrence Korb, relating to Homeland Security? Because I was speaking with some of the Occupy movement people who were also demonstrating against the bill, and they're concerned about the militarization of police, et cetera. But I haven't been able to find anything in it. Is there something that you know about?
No, I mean, they are concerned because they say the policemen are acting like military people when they, you know, quote unquote, storm these parks and things like that. No, I haven't seen anything. I mean, there were 275 amendments proposed. It was one amendment I was hoping that they would pass, which they didn't. I don't know if you realize this. If a woman in the military is raped or a victim of incest, she has to pay for her own abortion at a military hospital. And to me, that's outrageous, particularly for some young enlisted, you know, person. And you know, there were, unfortunately, a lot of issues of sexual violence committed against military women, particularly enlisted people.
Now, this is not uncommon, is it?
No, unfortunately, it is a problem the military recognizes. You know, about 80% of these rapes go unreported. I should say issues of sexual violence go unreported, and because if you do, you know, it can hurt your career. And the whole idea that, you know, if you want to have an abortion and you're a victim of rape or incest, if you are civilian health care plan, they will pay for it. If you're in prison, they'll pay for it. But a military woman who are serving, her country has to pay for it. To me, that made no sense, but unfortunately, a lot of so-called pro-life people, you know, refused to let that come up for a vote.
So just in the last few minutes, Lawrence Korb, just to change the subject slightly, although we are going to be talking about internal politics within Iran and what is going on amongst the infighting with the regime, the Iranians are now claiming that they have intact an RQ-170 stealth drone known as the Sentinel, which was apparently lost over Afghanistan. What do you think? What condition do you think this plane would be in, if, assuming that they have it?
Well, if they shot it down, it wouldn't be in very good condition. I don't think they did shoot it down. I think we lost control of it, and they're flying on the Afghan-Iranian border, and it probably ended up crashing someplace in Iran. And they'll get some, providing it wasn't a violent crash, they're going to get some very good intelligence on it. And these are, you know, things that happen when you're using these unmanned drones, as we are so much in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's remarkable that this has not happened before.
So what this is, of course, the super secret one that was used keep an eye on Osama bin Laden's compound prior to the U.S. raid, and it presumably can evaded Pakistani radar, and it has apparently a long loitering ability, so it can stay up there for a long time. The Iranians are claiming that they hacked into its guidance and therefore captured it. If that's true, then the whole drone program is vulnerable.
Yeah, they claim that, but I don't think that's true at all, because they are very, very sophisticated, using, satellites and stuff. I would be dumbfounded if, in fact, they did. I'm not surprised that's what they're claiming, because, again, they would like to show, get us to, worry about being able to use those things. Because even though they're flying over Afghanistan territory, they've been able to spy on Iran. I mean, if you given, the scope of that they can take in. So I'm not surprised that they're saying that. But I just don't think, I mean, given the sophistication of that communication, I would be dumbfounded if they did that. Just like if they said they recovered it after they shot it down, I don't think, that makes sense either.
Well, it's surely a possibility, though, that since there are so few of these, apparently there's only a handful of these new, they're sort of like a small version of the B-2 bomber, these unmanned Sentinel drones. Isn't it possible that we've also been using them to look at the Iranian nuclear facilities?
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. As I say, even flying over Pakistani airspace, you can do that, or flying over Iraqi airspace, you can do that.
Mm-hmm. So it's possible that the story that somehow they lost control of it in Afghanistan, it may well have been over Iran when they lost control of it.
Well, it could have been.
It ended up somewhere in Iran, but I don't know where.
Yeah, well, we really don't know, but I have no doubt that even over Afghan airspace that they were able to gather intelligence about what's happening in Iran, because you look at that border, they're right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for joining us, Lawrence Korb. And when do you think we'll know about this veto? When will it actually happen, do you think?
Well, I mean, they're going to try and get it, pass the bill before Congress adjourns. And I think if it's vetoed, it'll be the first one in recent memory. I do know that President Ford vetoed a defense authorization bill, but it's been a long time since, that has happened. And, of course, if he vetoes it, and assuming even if he can, get the veto sustained, then you're going to have to pass the bill again. And don't forget, this is for the fiscal year that started 1 October. So we're already late into the year.
So who's got the leverage?
Well, right now, with that vote, it would seem to me that the Senate has it, because, again, the Pentagon wants to get the money to get going, and it's already causing some managerial problems, and it'd be embarrassing for the president to have his veto not sustained, particularly in one of the branches of government controlled by the Democrats.
Again, I thank you for joining us, Lawrence Korb.
Okay, nice to be with you.
And I've been speaking with Lawrence Korb, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, and a professor at Georgetown University. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration and is the author of A New National Security Strategy in an Age of Terrorists, Tyrants, and Weapons of Mass Destruction. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about internal struggles within the ruling elite in Iran.